understand that us kids are going to make some mistakes. So to you other kids all across the land, there's no need to argue. Parents just don't understand.
This is Comics Therapy, Episode 10. No reviews, just analysis. On this week's show, we'll be discussing three books from September 25th, 2013.
Who
Jupiter's
are you?
Legacy number 3, FF number 12, and Saga number 14. If you haven't read them yet, consider yourself spoiler warned. For grief counseling, we'll talk about Volume 7 of The Walking Dead, containing issues 37 through 42. And for Aaron's inner child, well, I don't want to give that away, so you'll just have to be patient.
I think I just died. I love it. Ah.
Greetings, comic therapists. This is Roderick Ruth, the man that can't be stopped, at Roderick Ruth on the Twitter sphere. And aside from the fact that I've been lagging behind on my comic book reading, because I've been watching The West Wing with Andrea on Netflix, my nerd confession this week has been burdening me for quite some time. I've been purchasing the Villains Month issues from DC in all their 3D lenticular glory, but I haven't read a single one. One-shots and repurposed villain origin stories just haven't enticed me enough to read any of them. Even the ones by one of my favorite writers, Matt Kent, have fallen by the wayside. I just bag and board them, and to the long box they go. From the buzz on the internet, I'm not sure I'm missing much in the continuity department. Phew. Glad to get that off my chest. You guys are right. Catharsis is cool. See ya.
Hi, kids. Welcome to Comics Therapy. I'm still recovering from that intro. Neither Aaron nor I is a licensed psychotherapist, but you know that by now. I'm still going to warn you not to take anything we say as serious medical advice, because I am totally afraid of authority, and I don't want to get in trouble. Today, in fact, we are talking about the ultimate authority. Not God, not the law, your parents. Well, our parents, or, you know, parents in general.
In between segments, your very own nerd confessions. Itching to get a deep, dark, geeky secret off your chest? Like, even though the Joker's Daughter issue of Villains Month was one of the worst books you read in a long time, you seriously considered spending $50 on a copy just to complete your 3D cover set? Then leave us a message and we'll feature it on an upcoming episode of the show. You can call, Skype, or email them in. All the details are on the website, comicstherapy.com. Remember, catharsis is cool.
And in between shows, you can find Aaron on Twitter, at Aaron Myers, and me, at Andrea Schock, and the show account, at Comics Therapy. Aaron, I know that you really want to talk about Rose City Comic Con, but I think a little bit of delayed gratification never hurt anybody, so how was your week other than the con?
There is no week, only con.
I handed that one to you, didn't I?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. I mean, really, what else is there to talk about? But I guess we can delay it a bit. I can say I had to work, and I bought a lot of comics yesterday, and I read a lot of comics, and I was still kind of sick most of the week, post-con, and yeah, I don't know, the only thing in life that we're talking about is con.
What are you going to do now that you don't have that to look forward to?
Go into sort of like a mental hibernation until the spring.
Okay,
and
this
then
is good.
Yeah, and then Stumptown Comic-Con comes around, and then I can kind of wake up from that hibernation for, you know, for a short time, fatten myself upon all the comics at that con, and then slip back into a, you know, comic coma, I guess, until the next con.
How much do you have to read that you, like, picked up over the weekend?
Oh, it would be, like, a year's worth of reading if I just, like, read that. I bought a ton of stuff.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was great.
And so, do you want to talk about it for real?
Yeah, I do. Because it was great. It was probably my best con that I've had so far. And I think partly is because I did plan it out pretty well. And I had 2 days, too. Like, usually I've only gone for one day. And it makes things really compressed, and I don't nearly get to do everything I wanted to do. So going 2 days in a row, I kind of broke it up between 2 days and didn't have as much kind of internal pressure to see all the people I wanted to see and that sort of thing.
In general, your approach to going to a con? Giant surprise. We approach these things in vastly different ways.
Yeah, but I think I've learned some things too. Like, I think the next time I'm not gonna bring as much stuff as I did this time.
Oh, okay.
Like, I kind of just got to the point where it's cool to have a bunch of stuff signed, but really, ultimately, the signatures, unless it's like a special thing like a Chris Claremont or something like that, where I'm actually getting something signed and graded for whatever reason, it's mm-hmm. more just for the meet and greet aspect of it. And I'd rather just bring one special book for them to sign and mm-hmm. then kind of launch the conversation from there.
Sure.
As opposed to like, here's six books, to sign for me.
Right. Did you buy any original art?
Yeah, I bought a page from Jonathan Case, who does like Batman 66 right now.
Cool.
I bought a page. He did a short story in, it was like 2 issues ago in Eerie, Eerie, the like horror comic book. Yeah.
I don't read it, but you didn't need to be told that.
Right. But he did a really cool short story and his pages are there. His Batman pages I love, but they're just kind of out of my price range. I didn't want to like spend all my con money on just one page. So I got a page of Eerie from him. I got a Fantastic Four page from David Hahn. I got a few sketches
too. Okay.
So, I bought a bunch of art, bunch of books.
What did you get for the boys?
Well, Logan doesn't really care about anything but eating his hands right now.
Right, but, it's an investment in legacy.
No, I didn't get him anything. Let's see, I got Luke. What did I get him? Now I can't even remember all the things I got. I got Chrissy a bunch of stuff.
Yes. I saw one, which was an exquisite gift.
Yes. Yeah, that was fun. And I got her shirt. And she really liked the Lady Rawhide, the first issue of that. So I got the writer of that to sign that to her.
Excellent.
Yeah, just a bunch of swag stuff. Oh, cool. I know what I got, Luke. I bought a ton of top shelf books.
Oh, that's right. That's
yes. Right. So I waited till the second day of the con when everyone starts dumping their stuff at half price and loaded up on probably like a dozen top shelf books that we didn't have already.
Great.
Yeah. So that. And I got Gronk, which is Katie Cook's mm-hmm. book. Got 3 volumes of that from her. That's really kind of aimed towards, kids. And he liked those. So, I guess I got Luke a lot of books. But at the same time, I kind of think that's for me, too. Because I get to read him books that I want to read, so.
Right.
It's a win-win.
It's always all about you.
Yeah, sure. Well, every gift should be a gift for everyone.
I feel like that's the Homer Simpson rule of gift giving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you
right.
Pick the thing that you want, and then you share it.
Right.
And maybe they don't like it, so you can have it anyway.
Exactly. Well, you don't want this Silver Age run of something? Well, I'll take it. We'll just keep it in the comic book room for now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me about your week.
Well, we are leaving tomorrow morning for Pittsburgh for some family stuff. So it's been a week of preparing for 2 different things, right? Still getting the house in order. Mm-hmm. And I have a story about that in a moment. Okay. But then picking up and flying back to Pittsburgh for 4 days. It's great, though, because with the circumstances of the trip not being the happiest, it is still a celebration of life and a celebration of family, which is awesome. So we get to have a bonus trip of seeing everyone back in Pittsburgh. And that is not something that we obviously planned to do, but I'll take it. It's pretty excellent to have that extra time before we go back for our standard Thanksgiving trip. But here's what's going on with the house.
Okay.
I noticed the other day that there was some water in the kitchen in like a weird way. Stone tile in the kitchen has some cracks, maybe aesthetic, but it turns out not so much. And there was like a little bit of weeping of moisture up through those cracks, which is never a good thing.
But not actual weeping, like haunting kind of
that,
thing?
No, that comes later.
Okay.
This is just the first step.
Okay.
So I investigated further.
Wait, I'm going to stop you right now. If this ends in your comic books getting flooded, I don't want to hear it.
No, oh my gosh, no.
Okay.
No, my comic books are fine. They're all put away. I posted pictures.
Okay.
I'm so glad that that's the part that you're concerned about. It's not me. It's not my actual stuff. It's the comics.
Well, I'm just thinking about what's important.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has to.
Right. So I investigated further, right? And I'm looking at what's happening, and the floor is like a little wetter than it should be. And
should the floor ever be wet?
No, it shouldn't.
Okay.
And I happened to notice shortly after I made a couple phone calls about this problem. that there was a tremendous increase in the moisture after the dishwasher was running.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, these stone tiles are, like, squishy.
Yeah.
See, it's funny, because if I don't laugh about it, it's so tragically terrible that I'll probably cry.
Okay, go on.
Anyway, when they came yesterday to evaluate the situation, this is a problem that has been brewing for years. The entire subfloor was installed incorrectly. I mean, it's like missing basically half of its subfloor underneath the dishwasher.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's been leaking and leaking and leaking. And now while we're gone, they're going to rip everything up and put a whole new subfloor in and put a whole new floor in and new dishwasher and all of those good fun things that everybody loves to do, especially right after they moved into a new house.
Well, at least you'll be gone for it. It could be worse.
Absolutely.
And you don't own the house, which is the extra good part of it.
All of these are really, really good things. But you have to admit that after all of the drama of months worth of me whining about moving, this is just fucking karma that this would happen now after we're almost settled.
Yeah. Hopefully the roof is intact.
Uh-huh. Well, you had that problem, so I feel like I'm good.
Yeah. You know, we did our roof, so I guess, you know, it's one or the other, right?
Right.
And now your kitchen floor is fine. And our floor will stay dry, so.
Absolutely. So that's been my week. I am looking forward to the trip part of this trip to Pittsburgh because we are not flying overnight. So therefore, I have, oh gosh, like 8 hours or so to read comics on the plane.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. Is it just, are you coming back like on Monday or Tuesday?
We come back on Tuesday.
Okay.
We get back really late on Tuesday. So don't worry, Aaron. Next week, we can do the show as planned, and everything will be fine.
All right. Well, until the next catastrophe, but I guess it's my turn next.
Right.
Karmically, I'm glad we're sharing catastrophes.
Yes, yes. Speaking of catastrophes, are you ready to talk about your inner child?
Sure.
Each week, I give Aaron 90 seconds to talk about whatever he wants that we don't have time to talk about more deeply. This is an exercise in making choices, something that Aaron could use some practice with. He even admitted it. 90 seconds. One book. One new comic from the past week that we are not analyzing. Are you ready?
Yes.
Go.
Okay. I'm going to talk about not comics this week again.
Oh my God. You always break the rules.
But I'm just going to talk about one thing. I'm just going to talk about the toy I bought yesterday.
Okay.
So I've been picking up toys when I can and if it's the right type of toy on Wednesdays because one of the stores, they get a bunch of old toys in, like stuff that I'm sort of nostalgic for, or just things that are really cool that are pretty cheap. Because I don't know if you've known this, but kids' toys are pretty expensive these days.
Yeah, I don't buy Abby toys.
Oh, that's going to be weird for him later on. But you're using my time up. We'll talk about that later. So I bought a Fin Fang Foom figure yesterday for like $3. It's
nice.
Huge and totally articulate and everything like that. Awesome. And it's just fun. Like, I kind of get over it pretty quick, too. Like, I'll buy it if they're not very expensive, so I don't, like, it's not like I'm spending $100 on some, you know, collector limited
right.
edition thing. It kind of fills the toy itch I have. And then after a little bit, I usually just give it over to Luke, who will play for it a little while, too, and then he'll get bored with it. Like, we kind of cycle toys a lot in
yeah.
the house, so it's not like there's just toys everywhere. We kind of bin them up and unbin them, and it's like new toys all the time.
So is he still stoked about this one?
Nah, this lasted like 15 minutes. So, you know, that way he's not feeling like I'm keeping toys from him that are just like daddy's toys or something.
Right.
And
that's
then,
creepy.
Right. And when, yes, extra creepy.
Also, then, time's up.
Okay. But you wasted a bunch of my time.
Get over it.
All right. Fine. Let's just talk about comics and I guess we're done talking about toys.
That's why the show is not called Toys Therapy, because that, my dear, is a whole different field.
Yeah, that's a different explicit tab. All right. Our first book this week is Jupiter's Legacy number 3, published by Image Comics. It's written by Mark Miller, with art by Frank Quietly, and colors by Peter Doherty.
So I kind of love the description from Image Comics. The world's greatest heroes have grown old, and their legacy is a poisonous one to the children who will never live up to their remarkable parents. But it's more complicated than that. There's contention amongst the ranks of heroes themselves as to how involved they should be in curing the world's ills. And their kids are entitled, irresponsible, and reckless. more interested in securing multi-million dollar endorsement deals than saving the world. At least one is a drug addict, more if you count the rampant alcohol abuse. It's a volatile combination of power and irresponsibility, and it's about to get even more skewed.
Yeah, this is, I was thinking about this a lot yesterday, that this is so, it's like taking all the elements of Shakespeare and kind of reimagining them in some sort of modern superhero kind of thing. And even like, it has a lot of, even more older stuff, like I was thinking it has a lot of like Oedipus, especially this last issue.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the first thing that I thought about.
Yeah, but it doesn't quite parallel it.
No, no, but it's okay. It's clearly cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, it's like Oedipus and Caesar and Hamlet and Macbeth all kind of rolled together with superpowers in the modern world. But I think that's why it really works well compared to a lot of like Miller books. That,
see,
go ahead.
I'm not a huge Miller fan, but I'm also not deliberately avoiding of a lot of his stuff because content-wise, it's just not appealing to me. Mm-hmm. So I really can't be a fantastic spokesperson for, you know, the Why We Hate Mark Miller Club. There's plenty of that available on the internet if anybody's interested. But
I also don't think that's a fair thing to pigeonhole him with because I think I've read a pretty decent amount of his books, and about half of them I hate and half of them I love.
How about when he actually speaks for himself, though? Because that I often hate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Mark Miller and Frank Miller. Probably not the best spokesmen, you know, for themselves.
Right, right.
But you can still judge a man's work aside from his public persona.
Well, yes and no, because then you get into the Orson Scott Card argument, and I have very strong feelings about that. So,
that's true. That's a fair point. I mean, to get off track here, like, what's the line for when you will not buy or support somebody's work?
Honestly, the line in this case was me just not paying a huge amount of attention to the creators when I picked up the book the first time. That doesn't mean that I would have avoided it, you know, staunchly. Like I said, I'm like totally not the president of the Hate Mark Miller Club, mostly because I don't have enough information to make that decision for myself. And rather than just listen to the very strong arguments on one side or the other, I try to find out more information on my own, and I just haven't in this case.
But is that based upon the type of work he produces or the type of person that people believe him to be?
I think both. I think absolutely both. And I think that there are undeniable trends in the work that he produces and the way he talks about the work that he produces. But all of that aside, I did not take that into consideration when I picked up the first issue of Jupiter's Legacy several months ago. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's both good and bad. And I'm like, I own that. I completely accept the fact that sometimes I just pick up books because they are fun or we're talking about the story. And, you know, sometimes that is a way to get past preconceptions. And sometimes it's a way to let those creators whose opinions, whose like people opinions, life opinions might kind of rub me the wrong way, scoot past my defenses. So I don't know what it is with this one specifically, but I have been reading this and there's a lot of great stuff about parents and children and relationships and expectations and what do you do when you have the means to change the world, but you maybe aren't the best person to do it. And I think from a world building and storytelling perspective, this is really interesting. So I've come to terms with the fact that maybe on paper, the creator doesn't, you know, we're not BFFs or anything, but as a story, I think there's a lot of good stuff.
Well, in these first three issues too, it's definitely a discussion on like the Superman ideal versus the, I don't know what the good, you know, antithesis of that is in the superhero world. Like a Lex Luthor in a way, but Lex doesn't really have the superpowers. But, you know, the brothers and their visions for how to help humanity are so polar opposite. And it's an interesting kind of commentary now in this third issue that the brother who wants to let humanity develop on its own and be the helping hand, not the guiding hand, is defeated.
Right.
But yeah, but it also leaves open the possibility for the son to learn from his mistakes.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like the best learner.
Well, no, but this is the fall. He's
sure.
He's immature.
I don't know. I have a hard time accepting that this is a good versus evil, black and white kind of story. I think that, yes, absolutely, the guiding versus helping hand scenario is an apt description of the two philosophies of the brothers, mm-hmm. but I don't think that guiding is necessarily wrong. And
well, you mean like shaping society?
Well, the premise in the world is that things are falling apart and the shit's hit the fan. Who's going to step up and sort things out? And on one side, you have almost a isolationist attitude. And on the other, you have a direct engagement approach. And
yeah, but it's also I think history kind of shows that there have been plenty of leaders who step up and say, things are falling apart. You're no longer capable of making your own decisions, you know, populace. We're going to make them for you until things are right again. But then things are never right again. And then the hand always has to guide the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, those societies always fail. Because people don't want to be controlled.
Right, but it doesn't...
Actually, let me revise that. I would say people don't want to feel that they're being controlled.
Okay, I accept that. I accept your revision. I feel like... Look, I'm not advocating the very strong measures taken in this particular issue.
Uh-huh.
Where there was basically a superhero coup. Very dramatically so.
And in the end, too, the son realizes he's a puppet. He has no idea what to do.
Oh, my God, he has no idea. That was possibly the best moment in the entire book.
And it was a great character-building moment. Like,
right.
It was very true to, like, sure, every kid thinks they know everything. And then once they break free of their parents one way or another, then they go, oh, I don't know anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, are you dealing with that a little bit?
A little bit, yeah. Oh, for sure. But it's good. It's a nice reset of like, yeah, you don't know how to like you know pay a bill properly or set up services,
right.
Or just like the basic life things,
mm-hmm.
that you said you were so adamant about, you know, that you knew how to do and why are we getting in your way? And now it's like, oh, you know, it only takes a week or so for all that kind of stuff to come crashing down. And that's the basic things, not, you know, let alone like in terms of this, like how to run the world.
Yeah.
But that's why I forget his name, but you know, the older brother, it's better to rule from the shadows than in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm. Well, he obviously has a lot of anger issues with his dad in terms of being fearful that he's not going to live up to his father's expectations or even his father's abilities.
But don't we all go through that at some point?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Utopian as a name, as a code name, is pretty obnoxious. It's like already setting the bar
right.
as high as possibly can go.
The best.
Right. Period.
Uh-huh.
The best.
Right.
I also have so much love for, is it Chloe?
Mm-hmm.
Chloe and Hitch? Damn it, I don't remember. Usually I'm the good one with the names. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm terrible at it, but...
But...
The couple.
They are adorable. I love them so much. So I think that kind of balance of, like, actual humanity that's happening right there in the midst of all of this, like, fucked up superhero war is kind of lovely. Just saying.
Yeah, and I really like... The literature student in me really likes these... homages to, you know, Shakespearean and older kind of tropes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, you know, like every book in a way, it is based upon that, but this is very much built to be a modernization of those stories.
So the general rule in that kind of story, like typically in terms of generational strife, the kids ultimately learn from their parents' mistakes, and the parents are defeated. Do you
right.
think that's what's going to happen?
I think so. Yeah, I think that's probably the long plan.
So do you think that there's a moment of enlightenment that happens with, and regret that happens with the son?
Oh, yeah. The hate he had will, without the target anymore, it's the childhood angst of mm-hmm. trying to find your individuality. And now that he's no longer under, like, the thumb or the shadow of his parents, who are not even just out of the picture, he's murdered his father mm-hmm. and been complicit in the murder of his mother and right. almost in the, I don't even know, the capture, what was going to happen to, you know, to Chloe.
Oh, she was totally going to get killed.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know, it's, if anything, she and maybe her child are the ones that come back to defeat him. And in that moment of defeat, you know, that's where the realization might come. Mm-hmm. But that's pretty far down the road speculation.
Sure, sure. But I think that the argument of how do you reconcile who you are as a person and who your parents wanted you to be is, I mean, it's timeless. That's the whole point.
Yeah, and ultimately finding a point in your life where you are happy with who you are.
Right.
And then you have children, and then the cycle continues again.
Right. So we've been talking a lot about, like, nature and nurture.
Mm-hmm.
Things that you kind of realize as an adult that you were very influenced in your perceptions based on the circumstances of your childhood. Things that, like in my case, things that I never would have known were influenced by my parents that now, like years later, like, oh gosh, yeah, of course. Because there's this foundation that even when you're fighting with your parents as a teenager, because everybody does that, there's still a foundation of like value transfer, whether you subscribe to your parents' values or not. You have taken them in, and then as an adult, you make decisions about like how much of those you're going to use to shape your own life. And I just think that that's like really fascinating to it. I know how silly it sounds, but I feel like I'm finally at a point in my life where I am able to take that all in perspective, and I can start pulling out aspects of my personal belief system and personality and say, yeah, that I can trace that back to like this or these conversations with my parents or this thing that happened or, you know, whatever. And I think that's really kind of fascinating from like a like self recognition kind of process.
Well, right. As you mature, you try to go from being reactionary to more introspective.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to do that like pretty much every day.
It's a hard thing to do. I mean, most of life is just reaction. You rarely have the time to think about how you're going to respond to something.
Right.
Especially with as busy as we are, you know.
My goal is to have like at least 5 non-spazzy responses a day.
That's a good number.
Yeah. If I can have like 5 moments where I could have reacted like a complete freak and instead chose the calmer path, then that's a good day.
How do you keep track of these?
I haven't figured that part out yet.
You need like an app on your phone or something, like the Spaz app or something like that.
But I do, like in the moment sometimes, I'm like, ah, but then I can keep it under control. And then afterwards say like, yeah, dude, I totally nailed that one.
High five to yourself.
Not be a spaz.
Self high five?
Self high five, yeah.
Well, you ready to move on?
I am.
All right, let's do that.
G'day, this is Paul Hicks. This is my nerd confession. I grew up in Sydney. I was my family were friends with a father and his kids, the youngest of which was a bit younger than me. We got on pretty well. We went on holidays together, things like that. As we grew up, we weren't going to the same school, so we sort of fell out of contact a bit. But one of the things that made it hard for us to stay in touch was we didn't really have a lot in common. I was, you know, a huge Doctor Who fan, bit of a massive geek, and he was one of those kids who was good at everything. So that's my new confession. I was a childhood friend of Hugh Jackman's, and that's 100% true. And Yeah, and didn't stay in touch with him because he wasn't geeky enough. Thanks.
Next up, FF number 12, with a story by Matt Fraction, Lee Allred, and Michael Allred. Script by Lee Allred, art by Michael Allred, and colors by Laura Allred. That's a lot of Allreds.
Yes, it is.
FF is published by Marvel Comics.
Okay, I cheated again. Here's the recap page, because there's a lot going on. While away on their cosmic family vacation, the Fantastic Four left the young and brilliant children of the Future Foundation in the care of Ant-Man, Darla Deering, Medusa, and She-Hulk. However, only a scarred, traumatized older John Storm returned, claiming that the team had all died and it was Doom's fault. Now the FF must find a way to come to their rescue, but complications abound. First, secret cosmic alien Julius Caesar recently approached the FF and told them his friends, the Fantastic Four, were unmoored in time and space, and the FF could use his space-time ship to save them. But on their first try, they were intercepted by the Impossible Man, who asked them to take his son Adolf the Impossible Boy into their school. Meanwhile, with his parents held hostage, Alex Power was blackmailed into helping Doom, who ordered him to kill old John Storm. Desperate for a solution, Alex and the FF asked Uhura's uncle Maximus the Mad for help, and the only thing they managed to do was set him free. For better or worse, Maximus has just met Caesar.
It's a good recap.
This book, yeah, I didn't write it. This book, if you took it completely to a novice comics reader or just a person on the street, it just sounds completely bunk. And yet, it is so fun.
Yeah. Did you notice, just from a writing standpoint, like, I didn't really notice that Fraction was off on this one. I forgot. Like, I know people are working off of his script outlines, but dialogue-wise, right, it felt very much the same.
I agree. And I think it's interesting that he's credited as the story, like, credited with the story, but then not the ultimate script. I think it's clear that there is, like, a path here that has been outlined. And there's a tone that this book has that, like, virtually nothing else has. So, as it continues to be irreverent and silly and yet, like, super meta and insightful, I think if they stay on that track, it'll be fine.
Yeah, it does a really good job of the meta and kind of inside baseball stuff isn't so much that it would alienate readers who aren't, you know, hardcore continuity or, you know, Marvel people.
You think so? Because I think that there's so much, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge happening in this book that if you...
Yeah, there is a lot of that. I think you would miss that if you didn't know what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it takes away from the overall story.
Okay.
I think those are all enhancements that are fun for the people that get it.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily mean it's necessary to the plot or the story.
Right.
Like, even... I was just even thinking today, like, a bunch of the kids in the Future Foundation, like, I don't know where they came from or who they are specifically. And there's a lot of them, and it seems like some show up that I just have never seen before, even though maybe I have.
Right.
But it doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't. It's like a kind of ragtag family group. Although the moment in the last issue with Medusa and Adolf mm-hmm. was, like, lovely. Where she was asking him, like, trying to convince him to come to the school and said, what's my job? My job is, like, to protect children, and you don't have to be afraid. And if you don't want to come because you don't want to come, that's different than not being willing to try just because you're scared. It was so cute.
It does a really good job of, like, portraying that interaction between kids
mm-hmm.
and kids trying to figure out who they are, especially around other kids. And in terms of this, I mean, it's quite a collection of kids, but it's mm-hmm. all the same. It doesn't matter. It's still just a commentary on how children relate to each other and then to adults.
Right. And, like, there are obviously some bigger influences, but, like, what do you choose to take to heart that an adult or that a parent figure has told you? And what do you sort of ignore and keep doing your own thing with your group of kids?
Well, it's a really interesting setup in the end of this too, where Now, are the kids going to be responsible for saving the parents?
Yeah, who disappeared at the end?
Everyone.
Like, kids and everyone?
No, like, everyone who was on the roof.
Okay. And,
with the machine. So, okay. I think just the kids are left.
Okay.
And Dragon Man. Who's just, he was the nanny, you know.
Right.
I don't think he's a problem solver in that way. So, I think that that's kind of I like that a lot. In that when the kids are put in the situation of having to rescue the parents.
Why?
Because it's always a character building moment that when kids are challenged to overcome adversity on their own,
mm-hmm.
and not, it's, you know, obviously in real life, it's better not to abandon your kids and say like,
right.
drop them off in the forest and say, okay, we're 3 days that way. If you
Here's
make it out.
Yeah.
Hopefully we see you.
Right.
But, you know, in terms of comics, there's like high tension there, and they're always, they're character building moments that they have to work together to solve problems that normally the parents would have to do.
Right.
And it forces them to grow up in a way. And in real life, that's what should happen, not in catastrophes, but kids have to have a point where they're allowed to be themselves and figure out things on their own. If you're always holding their hands, then they're always look to you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we've definitely gotten some, not comments or even like rude looks, but I think that there are definitely people who don't subscribe to the same philosophy of parenting in terms of letting Avi kind of figure stuff out on his own that we do. He's very independent, but always in a safe way. And part of that safety is the ability to be independent and yet fail. Because otherwise, if we do it for him, and when I say it, I mean everything from getting a cereal in the morning to building a Lego model.
Right.
If we're always there, then that failure is less comforting. And also the success is kind of like more fleeting.
Yeah, we definitely live in a society now, too, where everything's participation trophies and everyone's a winner and everyone is supposed to feel good. And this is not how life is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I understand that desire. You don't want your kids to have to feel pain,
mm-hmm.
or loss or not being the best. But
right.
realistically, you're not most of
right.
the time.
Right. Avi came home from school last week and said that they had a election, right? He's in third grade, so think about the stakes here.
Uh-huh.
For student council, which is third, fourth, and fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And each classroom chose a boy and a girl, and then two alternates. And he is the first alternate. And when he told me the kid who was actually elected as the boy representative, I didn't say anything out loud, and I was just regular old in my response to him, but in my head I was screaming at the kids in his class, like, what are you doing? My kid is so much better than this other kid.
Right.
But you know, you can't actually be like that. It's totally irrational and not teaching anybody anything if you're not comfortable letting your kid kind of go out and deal with those challenges. And meanwhile, like in Avi's perspective, that's not even a challenge. Like, he was stoked that he's the first alternate. He was
yeah.
so excited about the slight possibility that this other kid might be absent one day and he has to go to a meeting.
Yeah, it's hard not to raise your kids to be brats, though, to be spoiled, because
yeah.
you want to give them everything.
Yes.
I mean, I as an adult want to buy everything I want to buy and have everything huh. I want to have, so it's
Wait
extra
a second.
Hard.
You're doing that. You do that anyway.
Yeah, I know, but I don't give him anything.
Huh.
That's the right approach, right?
Yeah.
I go, no, mine. And I go off to my room.
No, but I think you're right. I think that we tend to be very restrictive, probably on the far end of the spectrum of restrictive, just because I have a fear that I'm going to raise a spoiled brat kid.
Yeah.
Probably because I'm a spoiled brat. So there you go.
And
That's
I have the opposite
my nerd
because
confession for life.
Well, I'm sort of the opposite side because it's like I didn't grow up, you know, poor, but we didn't have a lot of extra money for things. So I constantly have the desire that if I can, why not get something I want? Mm-hmm. And if Luke wants something, I really have to like not buy him everything he wants, mm-hmm. you know, because he doesn't necessarily even want it. And probably half the stuff I want to buy, I only want for a short time and then I'm over it.
Yeah.
And it's easier for me as an adult to be like, well, okay, that's not that big a deal because I'm done. Great. You know, I'm as mature as I'm going to get. But but he isn't. And it's hard not to, by example, instill that and then also to just kind of trickle it down. I guess in a way I'm going to have to grow up as just to, in order to save our kids. That's a depressing thought.
It is. It is. And I meant when I said that we don't buy Avi a lot of toys. First of all, because he's just genuinely interested in experiences. And he does a lot of things. He plays ice hockey and he takes dance class. And he would do more if I let him in terms of just playing out in the world and trying new stuff. But he also is extremely content with a stack of cardboard and some scissors and tape, and I am not making that shit up. That kid will turn anything into his own toy, and so it didn't take me very long to realize that if I was buying something because I thought it was cool, like, look at this awesome new, I don't know, thing that they made that I was susceptible to the commercials of.
Right.
It just becomes an obstacle to his ultimate desire to play with something else.
Yeah.
Like, he could build like a giant cardboard castle thing and play with this small toy inside of it. But I mean, let's be honest, the building the giant cardboard castle thing is vastly more enriching.
It's true. And it forces your imagination to work a lot more than the passive entertainment and everything else.
Being a kid is hard. You gotta learn how to play the right way.
I think kids know how to play. It's just a matter of us parents allowing them to do that. And not taking shortcuts, but it's not always so easy.
Nope.
Well.
Nope.
You want to move on to another book?
Shall we? It's my favorite book.
Hi, Comics Therapy. This is Sam Marks, and my nerd confession is, last week you had someone call in and say that they had stole the digital codes for library books. I've done this as well, and recently did it for Avengers vs. X-Men, giant hardcover. The comics from that book alone would have cost me $60, so thank you, Public Library.
All right, well, lastly, we've got Saga number 14. It's published by Image Comics, and this book is written by Brian K. Vaughan and art by Fiona Staples.
So everybody's reading this, right? Because I feel a little stupid doing a recap. It blew the competition away at the Eisners and the Harveys this year. It's pretty strongly argued to be the best book of 2012. And after a 3-month hiatus, it's back kicking ass in 2013. So here goes. We've got an epic space war going on for so long that no one recalls why. A married couple, each from opposing sides. They have a child, Hazel. She's the narrator. It's pretty awesome. Her father, Marco, was a POW and her mother, Alana, a deserter. So multiple people, including members of the royal family and a handful of bounty hunters, not to mention Marco's ex-girlfriend, are all after them. They are traveling with Marco's mother and the best babysitter ever, the ghost Isabel. And as for bounty hunters, the only one who matters anymore is the Will, who's pretty much my favorite thing ever. I am just going to warn you right now, I'm incapable of being objective about him. He's traveling with Marco's ex, Gwen, pining for his own ex, the Stalk, a fellow bounty hunter who got offed by the Imperial Guard several issues ago, and a rescued slave girl that they recently named Sophie. Also, a lion cat. I love this book.
It's pretty perfect.
It is, and I think that's why we've avoided talking about it, or at least that's why I have avoided talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, so many people have kind of gone over this book back over and over, and I don't think it's worth exploring at this point the narrative structure or, you know, how the characters fit together and everything else, because there's a million podcasts that you could listen to that do probably a better job. But I think especially this was a good issue to talk about in terms of the characters and childhood and this sort of plot developments, because we have a lot of pieces coming together and the whole... What really kind of struck me about this issue is the whole idea of a child being a unifying factor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in terms of this, it's this possible unifying factor of ending a war or exposing a war or something, you know, whatever it turns out to be. But, I mean, in so many ways, children are used or end up being these sort of bridges between people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really interesting aspect of this book. The baby being born brings families that would be mortal enemies together. It kind of makes me want to go back to like to the Shakespearean thing. It's like, what if like Romeo and Juliet hadn't killed themselves, you know, and just ran away together and came back with some kids?
Baby, right?
Yeah, like that would have changed that story quite a bit. And I think that's kind of almost what happens here.
Mm-hmm.
That's the star-crossed lovers who have a kid.
At this point, though, in terms of the impact that a child has on characters, and this is more on the micro level than the macro, I think the stuff happening with the Will and Sophie is just incredible.
Yeah, and it doesn't quite make sense to me.
It doesn't, but I don't care because
I think I think it will make sense. I just don't think we know why yet, and it usually has something to do with the history of the characters. Like,
right.
I'm hoping at some point we get more of a glimpse into the Will and why saving her was so important.
Oh God, I just love him so much.
And it's really that's probably a hard scene that we're gonna see too.
Yeah, yeah. But like he very rapidly became this kind of central figure to the story for me. Because the idea of Hazel as the narrator, as the legit central character, and the relationship that her parents have is one that is kind of much easier to take. Like, you don't have to work very hard to get into that part of the story. And so when you've got such rich stories happening around the central one is, like, what really I get off on. Like, I just think it's super fantastic that now we've got multiple parties and multiple children. I mean, if you think back to the prince and his wife,
yeah,
and their situation as well, children as the future is like a very important theme with all of the little families in this larger story.
Well, and especially with the prince, we've gotten other glimpses though of like, maybe that's not even his kid. I mean, you know, like when he's damaged on the battlefield,
right,
and that's sort of like whatever we want to call it, you know, a controversy around the depictions,
right,
you know, in those scenes, it's sort of more of a character building of like, well, how come he doesn't want to go home, and how come he doesn't really want to see his wife, and like, yeah, he probably isn't that into her for a multitude of reasons. And maybe this baby isn't so much his as it is, you know, just a stepping stone, you know, the whole idea of like royalty and these royal families, and that's an interesting kind of discussion on legacy versus family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, where most families don't worry about who's next in succession, but royalty does.
Mm-hmm.
And royalty being a lot of different things. You know, in the modern world, that even comes down to business, you know, and how that's more of the modern royal families,
right,
these days.
Right.
But with families, and the family dynamics are so complicated, too. And they're more complicated in public ways they are now than they used to be in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, family's a hard thing to define, and children often are complications and a representation of those complications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
In the family dynamics.
And in this case, the children they're not traditional, right? They're not, what makes them interesting, and that's what, I guess I'm even putting Isabel in that category. She's an incredibly compelling character, and she's an adolescent, not an infant or a six-year-old.
Yeah.
But she's, like, no longer alive.
Well, and in which case, really, too, death. Like, it could have been, she could have been a ghost for hundreds of years at this point.
Right.
So that's that's interesting, too. But that sort of, at that stage of development where you're not a kid anymore, but you're not an adult, and she's kind of perpetually stuck in that place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of fascinating.
But this was a heartbreaking issue. I mean, every issue is kind of heartbreaking, but especially when it comes to children and abuse.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, the scene with Sophie and Lion Cat.
Yeah, it's meant to make you just
end up crying. God, so good.
But that's also children don't have the capacity to understand the horrors that can befall upon them.
Right.
And, you know, as a parent, you try everything you can to protect your kids from ever having to deal with anything like that.
Yeah, but it is sort of a beautiful moment when, I guess when the adults, and it happens repeatedly in this book, but when the adults kind of have that little reminder of the importance of the next generation. Like, there's a moment with Hazel's granny, and then there's the moment with the Will and Sophie, and, like, it's just been repeated over and over again, that it's like, this is a child. This is what comes next after we're gone. And there's a kind of inherent parenting role that all of these characters are taking on themselves when they kind of cut through the drama of the war and the politics. And there's just like, this is a baby. This is a child. This is.
Did you ever see the movie Children of Men?
No.
It's intense, but you should watch it sometime.
Intense like I could handle it, or intense like
you can handle it. Yeah, it's heavy, but it's like the whole premise is, not too far in the future, basically people stop being able to have children.
Okay.
And so like it's the last generation, and what would happen to the world when we weren't, when women were no longer able to get pregnant.
Gotcha.
And how would the world collapse? Because in a way, having children and the next generation carrying on humanity is what keeps us moving forward.
Oh my God, are you transitioning into the last thing that we're going to talk about today?
We can do it. I'm ready. Are you?
No, I'm never ready.
Hi, Comics Therapy. Check out this awesome dream I just had. I'm at a comic convention with my wife and buddy. Mike Allred is showing slides from FF16. Ant-Man is wearing a shirt that says, "I made Doom eat my schmega." A Twitter friend was being picked on by some local political blogger. A few of us yelled at the dude to leave him alone. Then the dude says in a Donald Duck voice, "What are you gonna do? Get Howard the Duck to kick my ass?" Then the gentle nerd says, "Fuck this shit, you don't make fun of Howard," and Roundhouse kicks the dude in the face. Curtain.
Grief counseling. It's the light that keeps us all going during our darkest hour. And for Andrea, that's usually the time she spends each week reading The Walking Dead. So volume 7, what happened? How'd you do?
You're creeping me out.
You're welcome.
Well done.
Thanks. Tell me about this.
Okay, so this volume is called The Calm Before the Storm,
mm-hmm.
which is a pretty fucking apt title. I felt duped for most of it because it wasn't terrible. It was like day in the life of a zombie apocalypse. Do-do-do-do-do. Everything's okay. And then it wasn't. Oh my God, what the fuck?
So what happens at the end of this?
Well,
I don't remember where these things cut off.
Okay, at the end of this, the governor comes back. I thought he was dead. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. But before we get to that part, this is also the like strange sequence where they had, well, the baby's born. The baby's name is Judith. It's a girl, right? And I was personally very thankful that there wasn't some kind of monster hybrid zombie baby thing happening, since we have no idea what the cause of the zombieism is, but just putting that out there, that I was pleased that that was not the direction that we're going with this.
Mm-hmm.
So a bunch of people head out to the National Guard base to pick up like ammo and guns and shit, and while they are doing that, the baby's born during that time and they need the generator to be running. And so Billy and Dale go out to get gas, and Dale gets bitten because of course. And then they cut off his foot because of course. So that was super sad. I thought he was going to be dead forever. But he's just like old and missing a leg. But then, Carol is just, God, I don't understand her or her motivations. It's always seemed a little off to me, even under the kind of greater umbrella of this life being so just fucked. She's always just been, like, kind of dodgy and, like, unappealing as a character. I think that's the way we're supposed to feel, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she, like, kills herself with a zombie because that's what we're doing now. So that was also fairly traumatic and unexpected.
Is it traumatic that, like, all these things happening, you know, in the last couple of weeks, I would say, 3 weeks ago, you were saying you had no connection to any of these people. You didn't care what happened to them. And then 2 weeks ago, I think once they get captured by the governor, maybe that was last week, then that was sort of changing.
Mm-hmm.
And then what about this week? Like, do you feel more of a connection to these characters now?
Hmm.
Like, do you care what happens to Lori and the baby?
Yes and no. I don't know.
Do you not want to let yourself care about it because of what could happen to them?
Totally.
Okay, totally. So you're just protecting yourself.
Right? No, so this was also the scene, or this was also the volume where there is a scene where Lori tells Rick about Shane.
Uh huh.
So I was like, ah, danger, danger, don't do that. Don't even fucking go there as I was reading it. And then, like, it was actually, there was a kind of moment there. It was, there was a little bit of poignance, I'm not going to lie, where his acceptance and then kind of revealing that, like, whatever, you did what you had to do, just don't say it out loud. Just don't make it that real. I've already gotten over it and I love you and, like, you're all I have. Okay, that, I had some feelings about that.
Hmm.
For real.
Okay.
But that being said, I really don't like Rick, like, at all. And I really don't like Lori, because I haven't seen her do much of anything except kind of whine.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the problem is that when you have these little moments where there is some humanity and, like, compassion, and then therefore I kind of get all caught up in it, but yet you're surrounded by, like, a literal wasteland of everything else, it's still not enough for me. I am trying not to care too much because I don't want to be devastated, and I was very upset with the final reveal with the governor coming back because I really, really wanted him to be done because he represents, like, an entire mindset that is just so unappealing to me.
Right. As much as you might dislike Rick, ultimately he's trying to be a good person.
Right.
The governor is given into every evil instinct he could have.
Ultimately, as much as I can't deal with the zombies, it turns out that I kind of can. Like, I would rather know that I was reading a book about zombies, because then I can just, like, read during the day with the lights on and, like, whine about it on the internet.
But in a way, too, the zombies are predictable. People aren't predictable.
Exactly. So reading about what kind of horrors we're capable of as people is, like, I was hoping that he was never coming back because he's just, like, everything that is wrong with the world.
Yeah.
It's funny because, like, when I talk about this book with other people, you guys all laugh at me because I'm only, 42 issues in?
Uh-huh.
Like, Roddy thinks it's hilarious because I have so much more to read, and I just don't understand how much worse it can get, and I know it's going to. So I think that you all need to accept the fact that I'm going to do this for one more week, and then I'm going to put it away for a while. And we can pick another book, and I can even read that book. It doesn't have to be you. Although, dude, the idea that you only have $15 a week is brilliant, and don't think that that's not going to be, like, what we do eventually. But I need to set this one aside for a while. I think next week is it, and then, like, let's table it and come up with something else, because...
It's fine. I mean, there's 6 volumes of Crossed you could read.
I don't even know what that is.
That's fine. Well, in 2 weeks, Crossed Volume 1. You'll love it.
I don't believe you at all.
It's not about zombies.
Yeah, but is it more torture porn?
Oh, torture porn's such an ugly word.
It is, and it is ugly on purpose. And I think that that's... Like,
There's a beauty in...
No. Think back to how I did with... Oh, shoot. What's it called? With the serial killer.
I don't even remember last week.
No. You like this book. Who's been lobotomized, and then he's like helping.
Oh, Bedlam.
Thank you. Think about how well I did with that. Think about how I kind of got over my, on paper, aversion to it. And I was willing to acknowledge that at the end, it wasn't torture porn because there were redeemable, like, story happenings.
You have to admit that's true with The Walking Dead, too.
Do I?
I think you should. I think everything you have said proves that that's true.
Maybe I need to go back and listen to this.
Yeah, this is a good show. You should listen to it.
Okay, so I will read it one more time, and then we'll table it, unless I have a change of heart, which everyone says I will absolutely not have a change of heart after the 48th issue. So there you go.
We'll see. The internet's full of idiots. Don't listen to those people.
Okay.
All right. Well, I guess that's it.
Yeah.
We made it.
Episode 10, baby!
We're feeling rather self-congratulatory, aren't we?
Yes, it is pretty excellent. But, you know, I've been putting up with your shit for 10 weeks, so don't hate.
It's true. That's a lot. I wouldn't wish that upon anyone. There's only one other person who has to deal with that. And she's contractually.
Saint.
Yeah, it's contractually required to.
All
right. Well, I think we'll see you next week, everyone.
Yeah. Thanks for listening and sharing, talking about us on the internet. And if you're looking for show notes, they're awesome. I rate them just for you. Details about subscribing or information about submitting a nerd confession, it's all on the website at comicstherapy.com.
And one last thing, too. If you have a Kickstarter or a project you're working on that you want us to maybe highlight on the show, get in contact with us. Let us know what it's about. And if it's a good fit for the show, maybe we'll feature it.
Absolutely. High five and kisses to everybody for supporting Cartosia Tales, which was funded this week. Hooray.
Yep, that's great. All right, everybody, we'll see you next week.
And here I am, close to getting tangled up inside the thought of you. Do you love him as much as I do?